Live from the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, the only local show taking a principled stand on the issues of the day.
This is how it happens. It's the natural process of things.
The view of the entrenched is predictable, but it's also erroneous.
With Sean Seacrest.
We have an addiction in this country, not only to government welfare and government handouts, but more fundamentally, to other people's money.
And Quaid.
Again, you're dancing with government.
This is the Morning Meeting.
You cannot continue to advocate for status quo when status quo has run the ship aground.
On Talk Radio 930, WTAD.
We're going to be all over the place today. We're, of course, here in the palatial WTAD studio, and in about 30 minutes, we're going to be swinging out to the home of Skyline Chili, college football controversy, and Governor Kasich will be swinging out to Ohio.
College football controversy?
Well, every time Ohio State's involved in something, it's a controversy.
Oh, so it's just a baseline controversy we're talking about
much.
The Buckeyes?
Yeah, okay. You swing out to the horseshoe. Something's going on when you're out that way. That'll be a little bit about half an hour. Dwayne Lester, DwayneLester.com, going to join us here on the Morning Meeting. Sean Seacrest, Quaid, alongside you this morning. Some things are dead already this morning in the Illinois legislature session. Some things are because hashtag Rauner. We'll get into what his responsibilities are. And in the GOP, there are some people who just will not go quietly into the dying of the light. So we'll cover all that coming up this morning and figure out just whether or not Quaid's going to be able to survive on leftovers. Yeah, we'll get to that this morning.
I'm a master of surviving on leftovers.
This might be a little different. So I don't know if your dandelion and burdock's going to match up.
You don't mean my family leftovers. You mean a larger leftover? Is that what you're talking about?
So think doomsday preppers meets leftovers. Yeah, we'll get to there.
Yeah, okay, you're talking about like canned goods that have expired.
I accept the challenge. May or may not be the challenge in front of us this morning. So we're packed. Also, packed coming up tomorrow. We're getting towards the weekend. Beautiful weekend. Mother's Day weekend. You're going to be busy. Give Mom a hug and a kiss if you have the opportunity. But you're going to want to be here tomorrow as well. David Fromm, Illinois, Americans for Prosperity, Illinois, going to be with us. And the big breakdown with Craig Robinson tomorrow. Now that we know that both Kasich and Cruz are out on the GOP side, we're going to be talking a lot about where things go from here, what the fracture in the party is going to result in, and how that might be healed or might be irreparably damaged. So we'll get all that with Craig coming up tomorrow. One thing that you do need to know about that, and where I want to start today, Quaid, is what's being called the conservative chasm by some. These are the conservative thinkers, planners, maybe pundits, political organizers who have quadrupled down on never, 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 ever, 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 ever Trump. And so much so that they have, one, resigned to keep their ball and go home during the election, or two, and maybe even more destructively, run a third party candidate. There is a splinter group that is being headed up by, let me see, I want to get his name right. He's a fairly well-known. I thought I had this highlighted. I must have dropped my highlighter this morning. Eric Erickson, who has been on this show,
Red State.
Is part of that group. Yep, Red State. And you know that when you see this kind of, well, I'll go ahead and say decisiveness, that there is a core that either believes that they're fighting the good fight no matter what happens, or they're so disconnected from reality that they can't move with the times. Now, before you call me a wishy-washy populist, I think it's important that we all have a moral and ethical and rudder on what we believe needs to happen. And we're talking about government here. When you talk about life, that's one conversation. You talk about government, that's another. All right. Our founders knew government was going to be hard to control, was going to be a necessary evil. They chained it down in as many ways as they could think. And we constantly see it snapping those chains and rising like some...
Snapping chains. We constantly see it get up and go chain us.
Right. We see it rising like this just belligerent Frankenstein, and now it's taken those chains. You jump my metaphor to the end. And what was once in place to chain it down, it's using
Threat
to chain
active.
Us down. So the standards, Bill Kristol, this is the guy that has largely been cited as being at the center of the maelstrom to run a conservative third-party campaign. There are lots of things blowing around. Would that be Ted Cruz? Is that why he decided to get out to start with something else? What would it look like? It would be absolutely destructive, and let's be honest, it would hand the White House to Hillary Clinton.
It's an interesting point to make. I think it's a position that a statement that you've made that's been hanging around since, well, I don't know, last summer, or at the very least, the very first Republican debate when Donald Trump was asked, you know, or everybody was asked, will you support the nominee? And lo and behold, here we are after months of people saying yes, Donald going, well, I don't know. And then saying, well, if I'm treated fairly, I will, because he always assumed it would be him. Here we are, and you have people working to come up with someone else. I don't know who that someone would be. There are other people, and this, again, was a discussion at the Sean would put it, the palatial residence that I, you know, spend my evenings at. There are other people on the ballot for president. It isn't just either or. So whatever Eric Erickson and this group is putting together will just be another name on that list. You don't necessarily, I mean, what they're doing is saying, well, we know what you want, and we're going to provide somebody who will deliver what you want. There are other people on that list. In fact, there are other people that I think you've mentioned before, because Sean's got a deep libertarian streak in him. They have a party. They have a candidate for president who's going to be on the ballot in all 50 states.
Lest people think I'm being facetious, I have lived in apartments both smaller and with furniture not nearly as nice as your patio. So I'm not really playing it up that much about the palatial residence there. But I think you're right. I think that there is an ideology of we know best at play here. And it stuns me on some level that, again, you shouldn't abandon what you believe your core principles are, but I think there's a lesson to be learned there in at least communication. You know, they say one of the biggest gifts you can be given is the ability to set other people's hearts on fire, to give them a call to action, to reach out to them and motivate them. I think that's where we've seen a tremendous failing, because I believe that conservative principles are the best way to run a country. They are what is going to lift more people, what has lifted more people out of poverty, mm-hmm. out of illiteracy, mm-hmm. in the history of the world. But how are we communicating those principles, those ideas? I think that's the major disconnect. You don't have, and I'm not looking for one political messiah to come out and do all the work, but the disconnect on how to reach people with that message is what I think is the ultimate failing of the GOP for however many cycles you want to point to. Yeah, you had the wave election a few cycles ago that gave you the House. But, you know, have you been able to capitalize on that? Maybe you've been able to block some heinous legislation, but the big ones have slipped through your fingers, Obamacare being the headliner. What have you done with that? What have you used the power that the people gave you to steward for them to do? You haven't been able to leverage it. You haven't been able to create an environment, or at least to communicate what it is your guiding principles will bring to the country in an effective way. And you can't say, well, yeah, we have they reelected Barack Obama. That is the number one slap in the face of anyone who said, well, we've gotten out there and create. You can get some wins on local and state levels, but ultimately, and while it's important to participate there because it begins at home, ultimately, the power that comes with is limited. And that's good, because you should have limited government. But if you're going to set an agenda to get back to that, If you're going to set an agenda away from the nanny state, you're going to have to win at the top of the ticket. And that's what they've been unable to do.
Yes, and I think you kind of mentioned it. You blew by, I think, people's dissatisfaction with government. The interesting thing about that is you talk about lessening government. I think we've gotten to this weird place where people are dissatisfied by government, but they haven't come to the realization in a broad swath way that dissatisfaction with government isn't just about a particular elected official or somebody. It's that government by its nature is going to dissatisfy you. So if you keep looking to it to give you answers, regardless of who is at the top of the ticket, once you can reconcile that with yourself, then I think it's easier to move forward with that, you know, idea and people who will shrink the size of the government, because regardless of who is there or what government promises, it's never going to be able to deliver to you what they say they will or what you'll be happy with.
Maybe, and this is something that just kind of hopped into my mind, maybe you're looking at a Republican Party that's just at different stages of dealing with the cycle of grief. You know, you have disbelief that Trump was the front runner at one point, and then you have anger over his win. You have bargaining by some to get involved. Maybe we're just looking at a party that's going through the, what is it, five steps of grief along the way. You know, and some have come to acceptance.
I think there's
at the end.
I think there's an area of incongruity. I think you have a big chunk of, and I'll put Republican in quotes, people who are part of that party who understand that government needs to be shrunk. But you also have a huge number of people who this is their career. And to shrink government means lessening all of that. Those two things contradict each other. So you have an issue. You can't move forward because you have all these people who have made it their life's goal to be this person who, if is not the face of a situation, is behind the scenes. And I think that's kind of more where we are these days. They don't want to be the face. They want to be the guy who's calling the shots behind the scenes.
What you're asking for is no less than a conversation about what government should mean to everyone.
Right. Well, and the guy we're going to have on later will be more than happy to jump into this fray about where we are. And I guess where we're going to have to go through this cycle over the next 6 months, and Republicans are going to have to realize that shrinking government is where they're going to have to go. And you're going to have to make peace with that. And really, that's what you ultimately want. It isn't about, well, our guy's in charge, so we'll get some sweet deals.
And that's where the dissatisfaction of the American people comes in. That when they make change, as they did in the legislature years ago, they wanted to see that change. All they did was see you go, now it's our guy's turn to hold the wheel.
It's not what it's about.
And that's not what it's about at all. That is not the job that you were given by the American people. And that's one of the seeds of the anger and rebellion that you're seeing on the GOP side of the aisle.
But my fear is that the pervasiveness of, we have a guy who's outside of that now, who's going to do something for us, instead of that overarching view of shrink government.
Mm-hmm.
That's a question that I would love to see. And for whatever reason, maybe he's been asked about it, I just haven't seen his response. That's a question I would love to see posed to Donald Trump. Are you willing to shrink the size of government and get it out of people's way? I know he said that the regulations are going to be restricted. He's going to move a lot of those out of the way to help
that's
business. And I completely understand that. And it is a good start. But then you see stuff today, and I'm sure Dwayne Lester's going to bring this up, where Trump's decided, hey, you know what? $15 minimum wage is all right with me. And that immediately now makes you go, oh, what, huh? Because that doesn't seem like it's pro-business.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like it's anti-government. It makes you kind of go, again, we're back to incongruencies. So there's still a lot of places to go, but we got to work this out.
Yep.
as a people of this belief, you know, that when we say shrink government, those aren't just words we say. We mean it. That's the goal, so that we can be a free people. If we say shrink government as a ploy to get votes, and then we just have our guy make deals for us so we can be first. And no, that's not going to get anything done. And it's going to make people upset. And it has. I just don't know that that's the direction we're going right now.
Yeah, a candidate who has capitalized on people's anger at the system, how he handles that system, if he's given the opportunity, or what he says he's going to do with that system, should be fundamentally interesting as we move along this process. All right, coming up this morning on the morning meeting, the legislature in Illinois is back to its, well, let's be honest, inactivity. We'll tell you, bring you up to date, rather, about what's going on in Springfield. And Dwayne Lester, DwayneLester.com, he joins us in a bit here on the morning meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
Which then in turn usually leads me to the paper products. But that's just how that goes. It's the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sean Seacrest, Quaid alongside you. 10 minutes on the official guest countdown clock. Dwayne Lester, DwayneLester.com, going to be joining us from Ohio. Things that are, well, let's just say not moving at the Capitol. Once again, rearing their head. They're back in session in Springfield. House remap amendment has died in the Senate committee.
Now, this was the districts.
Yeah, this was the redistricting proposal that nobody was going to get what they wanted in. So we're not going to bring that forward.
And so it was supposed to be, what, an independent group?
That's how it started. And then it came down to, well, we'll give them some input, but we're going to draw the lines ourselves again a little bit. So we'll just move one block over here and wait one block north here and then take this district a block south. And, you know.
And so we're right back where we started.
Yeah, yeah. So that is dead in Senate committee this morning. Let's see. Oh, you remember this one. This was the graduated income tax.
Oh yeah.
Proposal.
We were talking with Ben about it earlier this week.
Yep. Illinois Rep. Christian Mitchell, the Democrat out of Chicago, got up after the issue, did not have enough votes to pass. And, rather than actually take the vote, they thought, well, let's see, should we do it? Should we put people on record for this? Okay. Lack of votes, though, coming in to get this done. He said there won't be enough votes to pass the proposed constitutional amendment that needed 71. That's three-fifths, rather than the 60 votes to pass the House. So, Rauner's fault. Yep. Yep, the Constitution, this is a quote, the constitutional amendment had enough votes a day or two ago. It no longer does. The long arm of Bruce Rauner reached into the House Republican caucus and simply shook people off their positions. We had 3 to 5 Republicans, I think that was the number I gave Ben on Tuesday, who were prepared to vote for it, and now they're no longer willing.
Really? Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
These are the same people who are okay with Mike Madigan. Getting people into he's like
right.
He's a speaker and his own whip at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently they're accusing the governor of doing that, and that's not okay.
I think the governor just let it be known that hey, this isn't something that the state needs from a business proposal standpoint. When you look at bringing people to the state, going immediately from a flat. First of all, if you're going to have a tax, a flat tax is the only quote unquote fair thing mm-hmm. to do. You're going to put this graduated income tax into place and punish the most successful people, the people that you want coming to your state. They're smart enough to figure out that they can go somewhere else.
The people who, even with a flat tax, have already left the state. What was it?
Yeah.
3,000 millionaires from the Chicago area alone
yeah.
have already left. And that's with a flat tax. You graduate mm-hmm. this to where the upper end, and once other millionaires start leaving, who are you left? It's going to creep closer and closer down to essentially where it's going to be me and you who are paying the upper end of that to support an ever-increasing lower end. Anyway.
I'm just going to rent a space on your patio.
it's going to cost you.
I know. You could have some of my income tax. The Illinois Department of Revenue's own research, reported that putting the proposed graduated income tax proposal into place would contract the state's economy by $2
billion. Anyway, say that again.
The Illinois Department of Revenue's own numbers, their own report, says that putting the graduated tax proposal into place would contract, that means lessen, Illinois' economy by $2 billion.
Now, do they give a time frame over when that would occur, or would it be like by the end of the year?
That'd be in the first 4 years.
Within the first 4 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because they said, what was it? Lou Lang had a group put together that said that this will get the state X amount of dollars to funnel to education straight away. Right? Do I remember that correctly?
I think that's right, and that's always the turn that they go to. They put in some tertiary runoff that would go to education, and then you're a monster because you don't support the children.
Right.
You know who doesn't support the children? CPS, when they close down schools during the school year to bargain for a contract that is for teachers only.
But it's a perfect example of give me this now for the short-term gain at long-term's detriment.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a perfect example of that. Tomorrow, I'm probably not going to be an elected official tomorrow. I'm not worried about that. I want today.
Yeah, yeah. Candy, today, absolutely. Dentist, I don't know what that's all about. That's in the future. And let's see, I'll just hit this real quick. Dwayne Lester coming up in just a moment here. More than five dozen social service agencies have banded together to sue the governor for $100 million. That's right.
Which agencies?
Put your pinky finger in the corner of your mouth if you like. They are claiming lost revenues for those overdue payments. The Pay Illinois Now Coalition, made up of 64 mostly religious or ideological-based community agencies, filed the complaint against Rauner and his administration in Cook County. Of course, you do it there, where you have a history of friendly juries. If you want to sue the government, you should have to do it where the seat of the government. Do it in Sangamon County. It's where the capital is.
Somewhere Travis Aikens. But yes,
I know. He's shown us the light here on the show on a number of occasions when it comes to this. So we'll see where this goes. Of course, the state, no budget. It's not the governor's fault that they don't want to vote on it because there's a primary coming up. Now there's a general coming up. Yeah, we don't want to be on record. It's not the governor's fault that Madigan's won't call for a vote on the issue.
You're going to hold the governor at fault on that. Are you going to hold the people who elected the governor? I mean, you're going to just go ahead and sue the people of Illinois?
When you sue the state, that's what you're doing.
I mean, yeah. But they say Rauner specifically, but
well,
go
sure
back and look at voter rolls.
The other thing that you always the other thing that you always do in a lawsuit when you're looking for damages is you name the person with the deepest pockets that could possibly be realistically included as a defendant in there. There's, I think, what is it, severable liability, something like that, where they can find one person liable for all the damages and they have to collect from the other people. I'm not an attorney, but there's something out there like that. Probably won't apply in this place, and he's not being sued in civil court, so he's being sued as the governor over this. So we'll see where it goes. But yes, when you sue the governor, when you sue the Springfield, when you sue the legislature, you're suing the people of Illinois. Think about it this way. Government is nothing but a shell company for the people of your city, county, state, country. When you sue the government, you are suing your other citizens. Simpler way to put that. Coming up, Dwayne Lester, DwayneLester.com, next on The Morning Meeting.
Where we go, others will follow.
That's who we are.
Even if it's not the best idea. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
30 WTAD.
This is Dennis Miller, and you're listening to The Morning Meeting here on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
All right. Out to top off the water cup. Got producer Josh all nervous here on the morning meeting. Sean Seacrest, the Thread Killer, Quaid, alongside you this morning. Dwayne Lester, DwayneLester.com with us. Dwayne is on the road in the home of, what, Skyline Chili, college football controversy, and John Kasich. Is the sky still blue there, Dwayne?
The sky has been gray, and I think that has to do with the fact that Kasich is coming back home. I think they were happy to have him gone.
Well, we'll see how that plays out in the coming days and weeks, and whether or not he is part of the rumored third-party candidate run that could be coming from the quote-unquote conservative aisle. Dwayne Lester, DwayneLester.com with us this morning on the morning meeting. Dwayne, a measure laying out photo ID requirements at the ballot box has won final passage in the Missouri legislature yesterday. But it still needs either Governor Nixon's signature, or if he vetoes the bill, which I think he will, a successful veto override in the legislature. We've seen a largely Republican, not conservative, but Republican chamber fail to do this time and time again in Missouri. Missouri's on the doorstep to something fantastic here, something that should be routine. Are they going to be able to push the ball over the goal line?
Well, I think you're absolutely correct when you say that if it gets to Nixon's desk, that he will veto it. There's no doubt about that. And this is something that I think the Missouri legislature will override. I honestly think they can come together on this and get it done. But I want to focus on something you said because, you know, it's important. You said that there is a Republican supermajority but not a conservative. And there's been a lot of talk recently about what it means to be a Republican anymore, because it's certainly, you know, you look at the fact that we have rejected people, good people like Ted Cruz and you know, even Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio or Scott Walker. You can't say that this is a conservative party anymore, especially when you look at what Donald Trump stands for. So, yeah, that is important to differentiate between Republicans and conservatives. But on this issue of photo ID, I think there's enough support from both camps to get this done.
Yeah, Nixon has vetoed a similar bill to this previously. What the Missouri Supreme Court said no about a decade ago, but they've got it worded differently now. But there's 17 other states that already have this in place. So it's not like Missouri's leading the charge.
Yeah, the row's already been hoed on this.
Yeah, and I still don't see what the controversy is. You hear from the left that this is racist, that this is how you disenfranchise people. To me, that is the soft bigotry of low expectations. You say that on one camp, they say that you're discriminating because you say minorities can't do one thing or the other, but your whole argument is based on the fact that minorities can't get the most basic identification. How is that not discrimination? How is that not bigotry in itself by saying that? I believe that pretty much if you want to get an ID, you can get one way or the other, and I don't know how that's racist or controversial.
Part of this current bill is to have the state actually pay for a photo ID if people don't have one and say they can't afford it.
So there it is. Now, what's the problem? What's the argument? You know, the only reason to oppose something like that is because you don't want people to have to show IDs when they vote, and why wouldn't you want that?
Well, now you're giving way to a gateway conversation that I think liberals really don't want to have.
Right, because their whole premise is that voter fraud is a myth. And it's clearly not a myth. Missouri is a state where voter fraud has been proven. I believe people from Acorn went to jail for voter fraud in Missouri. Mm-hmm. So it is a very real thing.
Also, Governor Nixon has vetoed putting a cap on state funding for K-12 schools. I guess I should rephrase that. Putting a cap on increases to state funding for K-12 schools. So it's just limiting the amount of increase. It's not open-ended to increase how much ever each year. I think it was like they want to cap it at 5% for every 2 years. Governor Nixon says that to put a limit on that is a quote-unquote broken promise. to students?
Well, you want to talk about broken promises to students. Let's look at how that money that they're being given already is being spent. Okay, we have failing public schools all over the state, and the fact that you want to throw more money at them, which is the less common response, well, they're just underfunded. That's ridiculous. You look at where things are succeeding. You're looking at school choice, homeschooling, charter schools, private schools. This is where the successes are found. The number one school in Colorado is a charter school. All right, the better educated students are coming out of not the public school system, not the government school system, but out of where you find school choice. There are colleges right now that are actively recruiting homeschool students. And the reason they're recruiting homeschool students is because over the years they found that these students don't need the remedial education that the students coming out of public schools need. Meaning when they get to college, they don't have to take basic English or basic math in order to understand what the college level classes are being taught. So colleges are actually going to homeschool students because they don't have to spend as much time teaching them what they should already know. They have to do that with public school students. So the broken promise, the promise has already been broken. The Missouri Constitution says that we have to provide a public education. But the students who go to these schools in some of these bigger cities, they're not getting the education. They may go to classes, but they're not being taught what they need to be taught to succeed. There's your broken promise.
So should I be on the lookout for a homeschooled 6'7" athlete with a hell of a ankle break and crossover dribble, you know, to be really the number one recruit coming out of Missouri? Is that, I mean, that's the combo right there, right? Or maybe like a homeschooled 6'7", 350-pound left tackle.
You know, and that is you make a point there that a lot of high schools, these high schools focus on athletics more than they do academics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a common problem, not just in Missouri, but all over the country. The emphasis is put more on athletics than it is education.
Dwayne Lester, DwayneLester.com, with us this morning on the morning meeting. Let's take the education question to the post-secondary level. Headlines coming out of Columbia that Mizzou's enrollment is plummeting even more drastically than many projected after the unrest that we've been chronologically covering frequently here on the show as far as protests for perceived racism and how that was handled on campus. I say perceived because, as we all know now, as we've been educated by the left, everything is in the eye of the beholder. So if you perceive it, it is so. The university looking at enrolling fewer than 5,000 students for its fall freshman class for the first time since 2007. This is a big university that enrolled 7,600 freshmen last fall. Of course, with that decline in student enrollment comes a decline in funding, comes a decline in notoriety, comes a decline in grants and endowments and capital fundraising. So this is, when you're talking about the post-secondary level, Dwayne, this is a dangerous step because all these things could suddenly start spiraling downward very quickly.
Yeah, and is it any surprise?
No, it's not.
If you look at this from a parental point of view, would you want your child going into that environment? There's no one that I know who would. Their parents want their kids. When you think about it, they're spending the parents' money most often than not. The parents are paying for this. So do you want to spend money to send your kid to a place that not only has these problems that Missouri has, and I'm not saying that they have a racism problem. I'm saying they have a problem with radical activists on their campus
mm-hmm.
being let, you know, their way. They are being allowed to do whatever they want, and there's no pushback on it. So there's no surprise that this is happening. It would have been shocking if it didn't happen. And it's a lesson for other campuses to learn from our mistakes. And I'm not saying you have to crack down on outcries of racism, if there's actual racism. But what I'm saying is you have to handle it a lot differently than this college did, because they couldn't have done a worse job.
Dwayne Lester, DwayneLester.com, with us this morning on the morning meeting.
I didn't get in here at the beginning. Apparently, I was preoccupied in another part of the building momentarily, Dwayne. Did we talk about, when I came in, was Sean talking about I guess, presumptive nominee. No, you were talking about that? Okay, mm-hmm. That's what I walked in on?
Yep.
Okay, well, I was there for that. We're talking about Donald Trump and Ted Cruz getting out of the race earlier this week. And you were kind of going through this. We were talking about who are we as conservatives or Republicans moving forward. Do you think we'll have this question answered by November, or are we still going to be working that out?
I don't think there's any doubt that the Republican Party is not a conservative party anymore. I don't see how you make that claim. The Republican Party's nominee came out and said he was open to the idea of increasing the minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
The Republican Party's nominee says that Planned Parenthood does a lot of good. The Republican Party's nominee has said in his book and on television and in a debate that he supports the idea of centrally planned, government-run, socialized health care. This is not a party for me anymore. This is not a party for any principled conservative. So you see that Google searches for the Libertarian Party have doubled. You see people who are burning their Republican cards. I've never had a Republican card, but yeah, the Republican Party may very well end up going the way of the Whigs, and quite frankly, they deserve to.
Well, there's always plenty of room on the Libertarian wagon. You know, it's a big wagon of freedom. Wide open places, limited government. So with that limited government, there's more room for we the people. So just hop on up. There's plenty of room on the Libertarian wagon.
I honestly believe that I have no doubt that I will be voting for a Libertarian candidate for president. But there are still a lot of principled conservatives in the Republican Party. But I can't vote for, you know, I can't be a part of the party that would vote for Donald Trump. I can't see that, because the guy, I've looked through his platform, and what conservative position does he hold? What position does he hold that will increase freedom in America? I don't know. I have yet to see one. The whole idea that he's going to bring jobs back because he's going to implement 40% tariffs, that's asinine. That's outright stupidity and ignorance. So I can't be a part of that in any way.
Well, see, Dwayne, I'm going to take issue with that just a bit, because the election isn't between Donald Trump and freedom or Donald Trump and the other guy. It's going to be between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. So if we all stay home, we just let the most damage be done to the country. I mean, right now we're talking about literal damage control at this point.
Right. When you look at it, though, you're saying, should I vote for the fascist or should I vote for the socialist? Who wins there? And what are the big policy differences between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton? They both are pro-Planned Parenthood. They both are for increased socialism. They're both for socialized medicine. I mean, are there really stark differences between the two candidates? And if so, what are they? Is it that Donald Trump hasn't been a party to killing anyone? Like Hillary Clinton was in Benghazi? And how do we really know that? And how do we really know what Donald Trump stands for on anything? He's already waffling on the minimum wage. He's saying he's not going to be self-funded, so all the people who are out there saying, well, he's not a puppet to anyone, that's out the window. What other policies is he going to change? I remember watching a Republican debate where he said right there on stage, I'm changing. So what else is he going to change on? You know, his whole history is filled with taking progressive positions. Why would we think that as he's moving into the general election that he wouldn't go back to those? I personally don't see the difference.
Dwayne Lester with us this morning on the morning meeting. I have to believe that Donald Trump is savvy enough to know that, and I'm maybe it's other people who are putting these words in his mouth right now, that he's going to need somebody who knows how to, the inner machinations of government works, to be his running mate moving forward, because you can't just be a bulldozer through, you know, the beltway. And as Donald says, expect to get things done by making deals. You got to know how things work. Is there anybody who will sign up for that job right now from the Republican Party? I mean, will somebody attach themselves to him?
Well, there are two things you need to consider. Is there someone who's willing to do that? And is it someone who will be subservient to Mr. Trump? You remember, you see these people out there. There are a few who call him Donald. Most will call him Mr. Trump because that's apparently the thing. You have to call him Mr. Trump. And so when you think about those two things, is there someone who's willing to sacrifice any ideas or any preconceptions that they are conservative and call him Mr. Trump? I think Chris Christie's all over that already. He's already signed up for that gig. If he's not the attorney general, I don't see how you don't take he doesn't take a job as VP. I can see Mike Huckabee doing that also. And neither one of those are attractive to me. I can't see, he floated the idea on O'Reilly that Ted Cruz would be his running mate, and I'm glad I wasn't eating anything because I could have choked on that. The person who Donald Trump picks for VP will have to be somebody who is subservient, somebody who is willing to be submissive to Donald Trump. And you're looking at someone like a Chris Christie or a Mike Huckabee or somebody like that. It isn't going to be a principled conservative by any stretch of the imagination. And I would say that you could look at the same thing for his Supreme Court justice nominees. Is Donald Trump going to appoint someone to the Supreme Court who's going to oppose eminent domain or oppose any of the positions that he takes? No, the person he appoints will be somebody who agrees with him and will be somebody that that he can go to in the future and be subservient to. I don't see it any other way. He hasn't shown anything in his campaign or in his life where he wants somebody to challenge him.
It's going to be a fascinating summer and fall as this plays out. We may be seeing the demise and rebirth of the Republican Party along the way, at least the remaking of it, certainly, with Trump seeming the ready to run as the party's general election pick. Dwayne Lester, DwayneLester.com with us this morning on The Morning Meeting. Dwayne, have fun in the East Time Zone, and we'll talk to you again next week, bud.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Take care, guys.
More coming up this morning as we wrap it up on The Morning Meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
It's The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sean Seacrest Quaid alongside you. Coming up tomorrow, going to be jam-packed. Craig Robinson, the Iowa Republican, will join us. And we're also going to have David Frahm on. He's with Americans for Prosperity in Illinois. There's a new poll showing that 80% or more of Illinoisans are in favor of a property tax freeze. So we'll talk with David about that, how to go about doing that, what it would mean for the broke state of Illinois.
That means that Illinois,
and for education therein.
Illinois homeowners are just greedy and selfish. They didn't say they want to. They just want to freeze. They
right.
just. They, it's not
well,
even.
You're curtailing school spending, so you're a monster.
Yeah, it's not even. I want a reduction. Get out of my face. It's don't squeeze me any harder. Just squeeze me at the level you're squeezing me now.
I just
don't squeeze harder.
Last night we were on the back patio at my place, and I may have squeezed some of the hope out of a 22-year-old who just bought his first house.
Yeah, congratulations.
He was kind of lamenting the property tax situation, and I said, well, after 3 years when you buy it, they reevaluate, and whatever improvements you've made, your value's gone up, so your taxes go up. And his eyebrows went to the back of his head, and he said, wait, whoa, I did that work. That's my value that I've improved. I go, No. Mm-hmm. You just leased your house from the state.
Mm.
By paying that much every month, all you're doing is leasing your house from the state. You don't actually get to capitalize any of that. Oh, he was not happy. And then he was lamenting adulthood just being paperwork. I said, that's what we've made it in the modern era. It's just paperwork.
Yeah. Can I just go back to the days where the biggest thing I had to worry about was which video game I was going to play?
That's right. Hey, does your veteran wife keep MREs in the house?
We may have one or two stashed someplace.
The Army has come up with a pizza that can last 3 years. That just sounds disgusting to me.
What?
I don't.
You ever had an MRE? Not bad.
Yeah. Yes, I have. But it wasn't a pizza that was designed to last for 3 years.
It's like a chicken Alfredo or something like that.
Yeah, that's what the MRE was. Yeah. We'll see what where this was. How did you know? Is that just the most popular one, chicken Alfredo?
It's one of the easier
ones.
One
of the better ones,
just
I guess.
Water, yeah.
All right. Yeah,
but I can't believe you're not all excited about that. Science?
That just sounds terrible. I love my pizza too much. That does it for us. We'll see you tomorrow.
Morning Meeting adjourned. Join us again tomorrow for the best talk in the tri-states. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.